You've landed Inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Once again, another week of great innovation. Hey, don't forget to share your questions with me. As I mentioned a few podcasts ago, I sometimes go live with these bursts of innovation, 10-minute webcasts where I cover one top innovation topic. But if you have a question, a challenge, a work situation, share it with me and I'll do my best to answer it when I go live. I will keep you totally anonymous. But I promise you, whatever it is you're dealing with, the person that keeps shutting you down, the constraints of the system, maybe the fear or comfort in your mind that's holding you back, whatever it is that's hindering your ability to innovate and shine, others are struggling with it too. All right, so the email's in the show notes. So today's interview is a treat because I've got two guests on at once. I love it when I get to do that because I think it showcases not just individual brilliance, but how two very different people can create powerful results together. So first, John Busek. John is a certified financial planner whose success in building and implementing change in financial firms spans decades. Valeria Jimenez is also a certified financial planner and chartered financial consultant. She has received several recognitions throughout her career, including the Hispanic Corporate Achiever of the Year, Top 50 Women in Business in New Jersey, and the Prominent Women Award. So what does financial planning have to do with innovation and success? Well, they've built a wildly successful business with a style of work they call teaming, which is, by the way, more than just collaborating in a conference room. So we're going to dig into that and why you hire for diversity, not superstars. I love it because these two couldn't be more different and you'll hear it in their answers. But wow, do they show us the power of that collaboration, the power when people are different. All right, here we go.
Well, this is going to be fun. Valeria and John, thank you so much for joining me today on Launch Street.
We're glad to be here.
Very excited to be here, Tamara.
All right, so I can't wait to hear these answers too. And I'm curious if you've even shared this with each other, but what's your first memory of being innovative?
Oh, geez. Well, the first thing that comes to mind was when I was in Catholic school. And my class, there was 12 of us in a class. And once a month, we would get the assignment of printing out the bulletins to the parishioners. And so every student got a list of people, the envelopes of which you had to handwrite the address. Then you had to fold the bulletin, stick it in there, and actually lick the envelope. And this whole process, you know, we had the whole afternoon and every, you know, so we knew we didn't have any class. It was going to take about 2.5 hours. So I came up with the suggestion. I said, sister, if we get done sooner, can we all go to the gym and play basketball? She's like, sure. All right. Assuming that we weren't going to get it done sooner. So what I did was I got two people that had the best handwriting, could write quickly, and we gave them all the lists and they wrote out the envelopes. Another group folding the bulletins, and that would go to the next group who would print them in. The envelope. Then comes the point of licking, which took a lot of time. Well, this is before those little rollers, right, with the water on it. But we did have a dry aquarium, and there were sponges in there so that the creatures could drink. So we took the sponges out and we dabbed them on the envelopes. We got done an hour early every time. And so the teachers thought this was a great idea. And when I look back, it was really the first team I built.
So, I love it. It's like process improvement, like innovation for process improvement right there.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, Tamara, that he is known for delegation. So I actually, sorry. And I laughed and I said, that's where it started. He started delegating. Gosh, he's like, you're in charge of that.
Well, talk about using your resources differently too. I think oftentimes innovation or being innovative isn't just about like thinking up the next big idea, but it's using what you actually have in a different way. Like the sponges from the fish tanks or whatever they were.
Well, I always give the example to the team of Post-its. In terms of innovation, and they look at like, what are you talking about? I said, well, the glue was created in the 1800s, And the paper was created a couple thousand years ago by the Egyptians, and someone took those two things and created a fantastic business. That's innovation. So you don't have to create something new. Sometimes it's just thinking of a different way to do it,
or that's right,
putting things, ideas together. So
yeah, absolutely right. Now, Valeria, what's yours?
So, you know, I had never thought of myself as an innovator. So looking back, I said, what was my first instance? And I remember when I was in middle school that I really wanted to just have my own money so that I can start buying things and being able to get clothing and things that I couldn't afford. And all my friends had allowances. And I did not have an allowance. I tried to speak to my parents about it. They were very tight on money. So it wasn't even a thought. And I couldn't work yet. I was still not of age to be able to work. So I had to find an innovative way to get that done. And I remember going to the stores and seeing the word layaway. So I asked, I'm like, what's layaway? And I got explained that, hey, you know, a layaway is when you put a little bit of money aside and you know, you can buy and merchandise. And eventually, once you pay it off, you'll be able to take it home. So I said, wow, I think I can do that. So I started taking my lunch money, which is the only way that I can access any kind of money. And I started, you know, buying things with my allowance. That was my allowance. And I would start buying things on layaway. So I will say that what I would do in the morning is I would just sneak a lot of snacks in my bag, and that would be my lunch for the day. And then I would take all of my lunch money and use it to be able to gain access to different things that I just couldn't afford during the time. So that was like my first way of kind of just thinking about being more productive and how do I, you know, what can I do differently to be able to still have some of the things that my other friends were able to have.
Now, did your parents ever find out?
Well, my mom did wonder, like, where is all this nice stuff coming from? And I would say, oh, you know, so-and-so gave it to me. It was a gift. So I think at one point she started asking me, wait, it's like, where are you getting all these nice clothes from all of a sudden? And I did tell her. She was not very happy because my weight had been going down. So she's like, why are you losing weight?
Like, because I'm only eating 3 snacks a day.
Exactly. It wasn't a good nutritional plan, I will tell you.
Right. But again, another great example, I think, of using what you have in front of you in a different way. So that lunch money could be used in a different way. You just had to figure out how to get food, right, from snacks instead. But another great example of, hey, maybe if we take the pieces of the puzzle and rearrange them a little bit, we can actually get a different outcome.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So let's talk about teaming. So first of all, explain to us what teaming is, because when I first read that, it was part of the reason we wanted to have you on the show. You know, I think a lot of us have this misconception that teaming of any kind is really just collaboration. So talk to us first about what it is, and then we'll dig in from there.
Yeah, it is quite different. You know, I guess teaming, in my opinion, is a group of people working collectively on a common vision where each member realizes that if the team achieves its vision, everyone wins individually. You know, everybody that has a business wants to grow their business. So by definition, you need to grow your team. And having people that understand the vision, understand that their contribution are just as important as anybody else on the team, And working for that team goal, and obviously knowing what that goal is important. I'll do better individually because the team does better. That's teaming.
So let me ask you a quick question on that. How do you know if your team or your people are really about teaming versus just about, you know, doing their jobs well and maybe helping someone else out? Because there's a little bit of a distinction of, like, hey, I do my job well and I'm there for others when I need to versus kind of being in it for the bigger team goal.
So what I would say in that, Tamara, is that it starts really as an opportunity of people partnering and working together. So when you start building a culture of teaming, it doesn't happen overnight. It really becomes a joint effort. And over time, it just becomes part of the process or part of the culture. So when people do start working together, a lot of times it's, as you said, it is just a plain partnership, but eventually the collaboration does kick in where, as John mentioned, they start working towards that team, that common goal or that common objective. And they just wake up one morning and say, I get it. Like, if we work together and unite, we're able to accomplish so much more.
And I think both of you have talked about this, about teaming being the critical piece to growing a business or an internal team. What makes teaming that important to business? I think, John, you alluded to a little bit when you said like growing your business is growing your team. But I think in theory, we all get that. But how does that really pan out?
Well, I think first, one of the formulas of teaming is understanding what your unique abilities are, or unique ability. So the best example that I can give is Bellarie and I. You know, we couldn't be more different. But understanding to grow the business and understanding what my abilities are, and equally as important, where I'm weak, having a partner, because we all have weaknesses. We're not great at everything.
What?
But having a partner that can complement your weaknesses with their unique abilities really starts to form a cohesive team. And now, as you continue to grow, you're not looking for people like yourself. You're looking for people that have that next unique ability that we need to expand our business.
Let me ask you a question on that, because you said this kind of like in context of this greater question of teaming, but I want to dig into it about the whole weakness side. And you were talking about how like we're not all good at everything. And I think I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, really, it's the whole reason why we built our innovation assessment to tell people how they innovate, and they understood they're dormant. And we actually specifically called it a dormant trigger, the place where they innovate the least, because we didn't want it to be wallow in your weakness, more about, look, that's not the place that you do well, so go find somebody else who right. does that well and partner with them. One of the things I've kind of found in my 25 years in business is that it is sometimes hard for people to recognize what they're weak at, and also then to be confident or vulnerable maybe enough to be willing to own it and go get help in those areas. How do you, in your both of your experience, how do you think about getting people and your team to that place where having strengths in those weaknesses or dormant areas is acceptable, and to recognize who and how to go to somebody else?
Absolutely. I'll take that one, because I really feel that in our coaching, that's really where we uncover those strengths and also the weaknesses. But it's really, as you mentioned, we want to be able to help people focus on the areas that they're productive and that they're strong at, not necessarily saying you're not good at this, so let's, you know, get somebody else to do that. It's more about how can we continue getting you focused on the areas you're really good at, because that at the end is what's going to help you make more money. So by taking somebody else that really enjoys and loves another part of the process, we're able now to unite two people that are able to accomplish so much more. So when you mentioned like what is teaming, what I would add in addition to that definition is that it's really an incredible way for people starting out in particular to really be able to have an opportunity to really be successful. Because they're going into an environment where they have a very supportive group of people. Automatically, it's like a built-in mentorship program. And you have women, young professionals starting out that really sometimes struggle with starting in a new position because they're not really sure, you know, how to be able to gain all the levels of experience that other right. people have been able to do, right? So that's where that comes in, and it really helps tremendously. And when you're really working with someone that is experienced, you know, the challenge is that they're like, well, I'm doing so well already. Like, why is teaming going to help me? And the coaching there comes in the one area that they can't deny, which is capacity. No matter how long right. they've been doing it, how good they are at the things that they've already focused on, they will get to a point where capacity becomes an issue. And now we're able to really hone in on how to maximize their productivity by delegating some of the areas that they're really not that good at, but will be very influential and important in helping them build.
So you said this kind of quickly, but I want to just call it out, Bellarie, for a second. You said, you know, it helps you make more, teaming helps you make more money, or focusing on people's strengths helps you make more money. And I think those of us on Launch Street as leaders just take a second and really recognize that creating teaming in your teams, beyond just like, hey, look at us, we're a cross-functional team, to what they're talking about, helps you achieve your goals faster. And if your small business, make more money. And if your large business, hit your bottom line in your team or whatever your P&L is. I think that's a really important point that you made, that there's really a direct impact to the bottom line from understanding how to build these teams in a way that moves together.
Yeah, in fact, we even created a formula around that using the acronym TEAM, T equals E times A plus M. In other words, talent. When Bell says, you know, increase revenue, make more money, it's really by increasing your talent are you able to do that. And Bell mentioned that no matter how talented somebody is, you have a capacity. And then the only way to expand that capacity, right, the E part is energy, right? As leaders of an organization, you have to understand that your energy drives the energy of everybody else in the organization. All right.
It's not true. Yeah.
Yeah. The A is the attitude, right? You know, plus M, which equals the members. So we got to have more members. So when you look at it, T equals, you know, the energy times the attitude plus the members. So to increase the talent, which is the objective, we can focus on any of these levers and they will increase that T, the talent area.
I was taking notes as you were talking because I love that energy. It's energy times attitude plus members equals team, which is really where you're
equals,
going, where you're headed.
Talent, yeah. Talent team, yeah. Same thing. Mm-hmm. Same thing, yeah. Because you got to expand the talent, right? I give an example of my grandfather sold fruit in Philadelphia, right? And, you know, he had a really good business. And, you know, I used to go down there as a kid and people would come up and they'd talk to him and so on and so forth. But then I realized, you know, as I got older, that every year, you know, he pretty much had a predictable income. And, you know, it wasn't an income like they lived, you know, in a lavish lifestyle. It was pretty fundamental, pretty basic. And so when looking back and then they said, boy, if he had this formula and was able to understand how he could leverage his business and his unique ability, all right, you know, who knows where he could have gone with his business. So, you know, that just gives you, you know, an idea of, you know, he was doing the best he could and he maxed out on the talent end and therefore maxed out on the revenue end.
That's a great story. And thank you for sharing that because it really shows you how you, sometimes we're our own worst bottlenecks in terms of moving to the next, in fact, oftentimes we're our own worst bottlenecks in moving to the next level. I want to ask you a question that just keeps percolating in the back of my head that I know that some of us on Launch Street, some of the leaders are going to be thinking about, which is how do you balance teaming with accountability? So making sure that while you're coming together as a team for the common objective, you are also holding individuals accountable to do what they're supposed to do.
Well, when I talk about accountability, and that's a favorite word of mine, everybody in my organization knows it's a two-way street. If I'm going to hold you accountable, you have the right to hold me accountable. And therefore, we're holding each accountable. And boy, oh boy, when you get the people in that type of situation, all right, things get done. And so it's accountability. I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways to hold people accountable. But I think that one of the most important things that they can hold me accountable to is understanding the vision and understanding their role and what's expected, you know, within their role. So if that's clear, now they can hold me accountable as a leader that I'm providing the right leadership, you know, to help drive the organization. I have people come in at all different levels of the organization, new people come in and tell me their ideas and suggestions and also tell me how to get better. And when you have that, you know, that when that's part of your culture and it's a two-way street, you know, we use a lot of sports analogies. And when I take a look at some of the great sports teams in history that you know, not just one-year wonders, it was because there was great communication back and forth and great accountability with the coaches and the players and vice versa. And so that's what we try to do here.
Mm-hmm. And what I would add, Tamara, is we've noticed when we started implementing teaming, and it's going back now, you know, our first team was almost 20 years ago, that there was a less of a demand, right, for managers because the teams were holding themselves accountable.
Right.
And I will tell you that that is one thing that for us was actually not something really expected. And as we started seeing it really happen, we really got excited about that. And we actually, at one point, we were actually criticized for the fact that we didn't have that many managers. <They're> like, why do you guys not have that many leaders?
We don't need paper shufflers.
Exactly.
We're good.
Yeah, they would give us this crazy formula of you need one manager for every 12 people. And we basically, even to this day, we have 150
Who came up with that stat?
I have no idea. And we have three sales managers at this point. So we have found that the teams really do provide an incredible accountability because people feel more accountable to each other and they don't want to let themselves down.
I just wanted to, so that you understand the dynamics that we're working with here. Yeah. You know, these advisors are not employees. An employee, right? An employee can, you know, kind of dictate what you do. You know, they're all independent contractors. They're all business owners themselves. And our top advisors and top teams think of themselves as their own entity. So to be in a leadership role, it's a pure leadership role, right? And so communication is really critical in that. You know, it's not an employer-employee relationship where, you know, I'm the boss and this is what you need to do and this is our company vision. You know, each team, each of our teams, we have over 20 teams, they have their own vision. They have their own unique abilities. And so what we do is we lead them, we coach them, and then we hold each other accountable.
So I love that distinction, and I will tell you, I think that what you're saying 100% applies to if you work inside a large company, if you're technically an employee. And I say technically,
well, it sure does.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between feeling like an employee and feeling like you contribute to the team and you are your own leader. As you were talking, one of the things I was thinking about was, you know, when I think teams really gel and when everybody, to your point, when the team leader becomes more of an enabler than a manager, meaning let me get you the resource, what you were just saying, let me get you the resources, let me see what you need, let me move you in the right direction, let me set the vision so that you're clear where we're headed. The team then, I think to your point, has the opportunity to really work together in a solid way. And to, I think, Valerie, you said it about they hold each other even more accountable because everybody's very clear on what they're supposed to be doing and where they're headed. And that is a little bit like a sports team. Like the quarterback is the quarterback, right? The wide receiver is the wide receiver. But they have to, everybody knows what everybody's supposed to do and they have to work in sync to make it happen.
And if I can just add, that's a great analogy. Just think if we reversed it, the quarterback played the wide receiver and the wide receiver played quarterback.
Right.
Now you got a dysfunctional team, right?
Right. Good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes to your whole thing about strengths.
Yes.
So the quarterback there, because that's what he's good at, and the wide receiver in the corner and so on. But yeah. Okay. So I want to, this kind of parlays into my next question, because this is something that an article that you wrote on HR.com, I believe, that really caught my attention, partially because I've had this conversation with clients multiple times of having some superstars on their team and that actually being a detriment in some way or another. And then I came across your article, which was when building a team, think diversity, not superstars. So tell me more about that, because I really want to spend some time here. I think it's a really important distinction and point.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I think a lot of times there's not a lot of clarity as to what you're looking for when you're looking for talent. So people go out there and they really love the fact that, oh, this is a superstar, this is someone that's amazing. But the real question is this what we're looking for? And is this person really going to add to the team? So we always take a step back and really look at it as, what are we trying to accomplish and what's the missing elements in the team? You know, what's the talent we're really looking for? But making sure we're looking at it not as someone that resembles us or that we feel comfortable with because they have so many similarities to us. Instead, it's really looking at it from a perspective of what role do they need to fill and what value can they provide. And I'm very big on really talking about diversity, because diversity could be diversity, you know, of culture, of language, of religion. There's so many different ways. But when we have diversity in our teams, we're bringing also different ways of thinking and different ways of looking at things, right? So a lot of times, teams that we see are the most successful are the ones that have this diversity and talent within their groups that really offers them so many different ways to look at things and also service different types of clients. So this is a really interesting thing. And when we talked about this, and we talk about it in the book as well, we talk about the NBA superstars. And I know John, yeah. I know he talks about that Olympic basketball team. So I'll let him kind of talk about that story, because that's a really great way to look at the difference between talent, right, and diversity.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's legendary that the best basketball team ever assembled in talent, you know, went to the Olympics and lost.
Yes. Yeah, right. But, and that had everybody, like all the big names.
Yes.
To build a team, you're probably, you know, a superstar. And we built a lot of teams around superstars. And, you know, superstars are in many ways self-made. And they understand that. And so what we have to do, as Bell mentioned, when, you know, there has to be some level of coachability there. You know, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. But if he asks his coach, you know, he's the greatest student that he ever coached.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, you got to be able to have the credibility and also the determination to coach somebody. When you're working with a superstar, they're not going to be open arms to your ideas. In fact, they're probably going to reject your ideas, you know, either directly or indirectly through their actions. So it's understanding that we're in this for the long haul, and I have to build up credibility in there. And then building around that individual, once we establish that credibility, once we show them that we can really help them leverage their business, then we talk about building the team around that.
What you were saying was making me think about a conversation I had with I was doing a keynote, and a woman came up to me after, and she said, I would love your advice on this. So they've got this small team of, I think it was like 8 people, and one person on the team is the superstar. The challenge they were having is that person, to your point earlier about like through their actions, their words often disagree, is because they were revered for their work and did things differently and didn't listen to other people, it actually had this really negative effect on the rest of the team. So not only are you dealing with the superstar, but the team of what used to be A players actually kind of became B players because they were now tiptoeing around this one person. And even though they were bringing in the results, and rocking their results, it was actually having a massive detriment to the rest of the team.
And that's a great point. You know, we actually talk about different assessment tools that are available, and we always encourage people, if they're bringing someone to the team, to take these types of tools, and not to endorse any of them. There's many out there, but one in particular being DISC, where it really talks about the different types of personality and what dominates. And I know you have a great tool too, Tamara, which I just happened to take, which I love. That's great, because what it does is it helps you better understand the underlying person so that you can see if you're a good fit. And what I would add to that comment you mentioned is that, you know, it's really about individuals versus teaming. When we're building a culture of teaming, that I has to come out, and it has to be about the team and everyone else. And the most successful teams are the ones that really put everybody's best interest in front of their own. And a lot of times with the superstars, they are the ones that want to be in the limelight. They are the ones that want to be recognized for their own self and not for their team. So we've really had to work on that.
You know, it's well documented that superstars in sports make the worst coaches. And I thought a lot about that, and working with superstars in our business and in other industries, I realized that there's just sometimes there's a block there that they think everyone should think like them.
Right.
So going back to the tools, once we, you know, see that is the roadblock here, that tool sometimes, more times than not, is an aha. Oh my goodness, I didn't realize this person thought this way. I didn't realize that if I changed the way that I delivered the message, this person would be more effective in their role. And I can't, you know, emphasize more the importance of using those tools.
So I have so many questions for both of you right now. I have four circles on my little piece of paper of like, I've got to ask them these. But what you were just saying, I think is so important, John, about recognizing that the way other people are motivated, the way they think, the way they do things is not like yours, and that's okay. And I, over time, have seen that that's one of the biggest challenges we have as leaders of teams is, first of all, recognizing that there's a myriad of ways to do things. And Valeria, thank you for mentioning our assessment too. I love DISC too. I love them all. I love anything that tells you a little bit more about yourself.
Yes.
But part of the reason we built the assessment was to get people to recognize the diversity of thinking and the power within that. Because it's so hard. It's so, because we only know one way of doing it. So then we expect everybody else to do it that same way. And to your point, that doesn't work. So let me dig into my questions here because I have so many. It's so good. So the first one is, how do you hire for teaming? I feel like in interviews, people always go, yeah, I'm a team player. Oh, yeah, no, I'm not just about me. I mean, we all say that. So how do you vet that out to know, hey, that person's going to be, they're going to work with our teaming concepts and not just be a solo, you know, player?
We do it both ways. What do I mean by that? Well, first we'll meet with the teams. I think Bell mentioned this, and we'll do an assessment. How are we going to grow the team? And that usually leads into talent and then looking for someone with a specific talent or skill.
Right, where the gaps are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the other way is, of course, we're out looking for talent all the time. And so if we come across an individual, then we want to work with them to really uncover their unique ability and then plug them into a situation that will allow them to succeed.
And what I will say is that during the actual interview process, as you mentioned, I have also had that experience where people seem to throw the word teaming just, oh, of course I'm a team player. I love that.
Yeah.
But I specifically ask for examples where they can demonstrate what they've done to demonstrate that. And a lot of times that's where you uncover what their definition of teaming is. And that's an important part of the process. We've added those questions to our interview guide to just make sure that we can really make sure we dig in. We also look for a lot of cues when there's a lot of questions about themselves and how can I, you know, grow and how can I build versus how can I add value to this team that you're introducing me to? How would I fit in? Their questions are a little different when they really are team focused versus themselves. And then the third thing I look for, yeah, is when they start asking a lot of questions about their titles and what's going to be my title and what's going to be, you know, they're people that are a little bit more self-centered. And we have found that those little cues sometimes lead to bigger problems in the long run. So they usually are not team focused.
Interesting. I love that. How do I add value to the team if that's the frame of their questions? I want to go from hiring to when you're together. So I want to share a little bit of a story with you and get your perspective on it. So I had this client, a big global hotel chain, and we did this exercise with them where everybody took our assessment. And then we use M&Ms to do this exercise. And we have them first get in like groups, meaning basically everybody's the same innovator, everyday innovator style. So everybody who has an inquisitive or everybody has a collaborative is together and they have to build something. It's fun. It's energetic. People love it. There's a lot of laughter. Then we break them up into diverse teams where everybody has a different style of thinking. And we have them build something else. And what my client came to me and said was, you know, it was interesting, Tamara. She said in the first part where we were all the same, it was fun. We all got along. There was a lot of joking. But the ideas, the solutions they came up with were fine. They were average. She said, when we got together as a diverse team, she said, we really struggled at first because it was uncomfortable. We had to figure out how to work together. We don't always agree, right? So we had to figure out how to have constructive debate. But once we figured that out, the ideas and solutions that we came up with were 100 times better. So the question I have for both of you is, how do you encourage and manage that uncomfortableness that happens when you're dealing with people who come from different perspectives? Because it's to your all both your points. It's so powerful, but it can also be uncomfortable.
So I would say that that's really where the key of the coach leading and trying to help is really critical. And we talk a lot about in our teaming process the importance of the coach being involved. John mentioned before the basketball team and how they had all these superstars, but he also says that when he looks at that, he also feels that the coach had a lot to do with the fact that they couldn't work together. In the book, we talk a lot about also the other team, which was very the
Curacao.
Curacao team. And the difference there is that you have these people really eager to succeed and work together, not maybe the most talented individuals coming together, but they work together because they're so excited to reach that common goal. So the job of the coach is really to help with the idea sharing and to really point out they have to know the different personalities and draw out from those that are the quietest in the room. Those are the ones right. usually that have the best ideas. So the coach having that perception and calling out that person, say, I'd really like to hear your perspective. I'd really like to hear what you have to say. And then building that trust and that foundation really helps those teams to start trusting each other.
You know, I thought of that a little differently when you asked the question. And the first thought that came into mind was putting a millennial together with a baby boomer and saying, okay, you're a team now, you're going to work together. And that could be really awkward in terms of, you know, who's taking what role, leadership role, and so on and so forth. And to Bell's point, you know, I always say that the baby boomer will sit around and talk about all their past accomplishments, and the millennial is going to talk about all the things that they're going to achieve.
Right.
And so really what we want to do is, you know, merge those two ways of thinking. Use the wisdom and the experience, but tap into the enthusiasm and the unbridled energy of the younger associate. And then once people really buy into that, and that's the Bell's point, we have to coach that. We have to coach it, right? And I think you mentioned it also, you know, the fear of change that's constantly, you know, there and being able to do it. And so coaching through those things is really, really important.
And, you know, the team that you just described, it does take some time to really get those people to trust each other and to collaborate. In a teaming process, that is one thing that I think many people take for granted, is that you can't just get people to work together and force them to just like each other and want to help each other. It really has to be built in a different way where people come together because they do have a common objective and goal and they respect each other, and that trust does start building over time, and the relationship is really built on trust. So the coach really coming in and helping them to just have a voice and feel more comfortable really talking is important, just because you will always have, as John said, someone that's going to be more outspoken or has a different perception, right, or a different personality, but it's trying to help everyone have a voice.
Yeah, I've always say the reason for most problems is a lack of communication. So therefore, the only way to improve the situation is to improve communication. And sometimes just to take the role and just ask questions to get the communication going.
You know, so we've talked a lot of different angles about teaming. Will you give me a real world example of either one of your teams or, you know, someone out there, a client who's crushing it? I want to understand, I think one of you had said, you know, when you implement teaming, I want to kind of hear what that process looks like of what you do, especially if you've got a team that already exists, what you do from kind of point A to Z to get them going in this path.
Well, remember, you know, the bottom line for teaming, it's a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
So let me give you the example in our business, in our industry, and I'm talking to a business owner that might have, I don't know, a small business, 30, 40 employees. But now let's analyze that. That person has an advisor that handles the group benefits, health insurance, and so forth. They have another insurance agent that takes care of the liability insurance. They probably have an investment person that handles the retirement plan. Oh, by the way, all that information goes to the accountant at the end of the year. But then let's look individually. Individually, they have other probably people that handle their own personal insurance. And then they have their own investment people. So when you take a look at that, that person has a team, talk about collaboration, that are collaborating together around the client, but there's not a written game plan on how we're going to all work together to reach the same goal, which is to put this person and their family in the best financial position. So if I could bring that team working together, creating a written plan on how we're going to get you to that point, do you see where there might be an opportunity for us to work together?
Well, yeah, and to go back to your sports really quickly, because I just think it's such an easy analogy for all of us to understand. Like a football team or basketball team knows what they're going for. In the game, they're going for the win, and or the touchdown and then the win. And then over the season, right, they're going for the Super Bowl. So there's a very clear, defined team goal that's obvious to everybody, to your point.
And when there isn't a team goal, even people working side by side, it could create a competitive environment versus an environment of working together. So going back to my example again, you have this person over here saying put more into investments, and the other person saying no, you got to buy more insurance, and so now you have this team that's, you know, really not working together, they're working against each other. And so by bringing that team together and having a quarterback, and then a written plan, right? Everything has to be in writing. Every plan, every vision has to be in writing.
Why is that? I know that's a naive question, but I don't want to skip over that.
So what we do when we're helping our teams build is we really help them go through a structured process, and we build out a playbook for them. So the playbook really focuses on five key areas really that we have found to be the most important parts of a teaming process. And it's the areas that either cause disputes or issues, right, if they're not really ironed out at the beginning. So one of them in the teaming process is compensation. It's really understanding, you know, how is everyone on the team going to be fairly compensated? What's the process so that people feel like they're adding value, but they're getting also compensated for that value? Another important part that we iron out in that playbook is really how we're going to service our clients. We call it the client segmentation. And it's a really important part of the process because it's being able to understand, you know, what clients need to be serviced by who and what is going to be the service model, which really also leads to that client experience. It's really building out a client experience model for each individual, you know, or each person on that's being serviced by the clients or by the team. The other is roles and responsibilities and making sure those roles and responsibilities are clearly defined so that everyone on the team understands, and then really understanding who is involved in what part of the process. So once we put that playbook together and help them and coach them through that, which can take sometimes several months and gets revisited periodically based on the growth of the team and changes, expansions, this is really becomes the important part of the structure of building a successful team.
Yeah, and to Bell's point, we can make any process very complicated, but we break it down to five components, and we actually call it the playbook, right? And it becomes the team's value prop as well, both with people that potentially may be joining their team. Why should I join your team? And there's a lot of financial teams out here. Here's our value prop. It also becomes the same value prop for a client as well. And so rather than overcomplicate it, and we certainly see a lot of examples where, you know, in our industry, corporations say, yeah, teaming, and they come down with this
gigantic
even Manhattan right. phone book if they're around, right. You know, of papers and so forth. But we break it down, and you can't implement all five parts immediately. And as Bell mentioned, the compensation is really important because, you know, why do most teams break up, marriages break up, everything breaks up? You know, a lot of times it's over money. And if I know how I'm being compensated, but equally as important, I want to add to that, is how I can earn more, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, I mean, you know, people go to work to earn a living. And if I can earn more, I'll probably do a little bit more. And if there's a clear path to that more, and it's spelled out in writing, holy cow. And then it also eliminates disputes if it's in writing, right? And no compensation, whatever it is, whatever the business is or industry is, you know, it evolves. So it's not what we do today, we're going to do next year. because the team's evolving and changing, and people understand that. So if I don't necessarily, I'm on the team, but I don't like the way the compensation is arranged now, I know there's a review process every year for this, and I can have input in that.
So the book is The Team Game, How Your Business Can Dominate Year After Year. And one of the, as I was kind of reading the reviews and kind of on Amazon looking at it, one of the things I loved is one of the bullet lines is learn how to create more time to enable expansion of your business. And I love that the time, and I know you mentioned capacity earlier. So before we close out, will you just tell me how teaming gives you as the leader more time to expand your business?
Well, first off, it's the one thing that we all have the same amount of, right?
Yeah.
Everything else in life, we all have different amounts. We all have the same amount of time. We wake up, we got 24 hours in the day. So, you know, how do I, you know, if going back to unique abilities, when we take a look at someone, they're probably spending 70, 80% of their time outside of their unique abilities. So by plugging them in, all right, so that they can maximize. I'll take an advisor, for example. You know, the only way an advisor is going to expand their business is by, you know, working with people that have more assets. But sometimes they're really smothered by their success because they made all of these promises to people who are not now their A clients or target clients, but they still have to service them. And then when we do the example of how much time are you really spending with your premier opportunities, it's somewhere 10 to 15%. So we need to move that up. And by moving that up, just that time itself, right? If we can get that 10 to 50, holy cow, that's a huge improvement in the revenue of the business. But then we need to build the team to take care of those other activities.
Right.
And that creates more time, all right, to do the things that you need to do. And we stress, and this is a big part of it, work-life balance. You know, you don't want to have a 20-year career and you turn around and your child's graduating college. It's really, really important that all of this, and when you take a look at your allocation of time, also you allocate part of that time for your family, for your interests, your hobbies, your religion, whatever is really, really important to you, because that's what's going to allow you to function more. You know, just because you work more doesn't mean you're more effective. In
right,
fact,
isn't that the
truth? We show people how they can work less and become more productive by understanding your unique abilities and focusing in on those areas.
Well, I think to what you were just saying, because you're right, and I can't tell you the number of people, and it's one company I used to work for who, you know, come in at 7 and leave at 10 o'clock at night every day, and I can guarantee you that my work was just as good coming in at 7 and leaving at 4. Pretty sure of it. So in fact, probably better because I was working smarter and I wasn't just grinding. And I think we have this funny thing in our culture where it's like the busier you are, the more successful you are. That's like the mindset, and it's just not true. And I think that working smarter, to what you were both saying, also allows you to be a stronger innovator because your mind is not as cluttered with all that junk that kind of keeps you in the weeds.
And there's one word that we didn't mention yet, and that's fun.
Yeah.
More time creates more opportunities to have fun. And if people are having a little more fun outside of work, they'll bring that to work. And if we can increase the fun factor in work, you have really a productive organization.
I mean, we spend so much time at work to like think that fun should only happen outside of work. No wonder everybody's excited for the weekend.
I'm having fun right now.
It's ridiculous. I know, me too. I love my job. That's why I do podcasts. It's my chance. Before we have to close, where can people go to learn more, connect, get the book?
So the best way to really reach out to us is through the website, www.theteamgame.com, because there, there's information about the book, there's our email address and all information to be able to contact us and learn more. And we have a lot of free resources available also that were also highlighted in the book.
Yeah. And if anybody even just has a simple question, right, just reach out. You know, a part of what we're all about is giving back and helping out everybody. And if everybody had a mindset of doing that, just think of what this world would be. So you don't have to be a client of ours. Reach out. If you have a question, we're happy to help.
Awesome. We'll put the links in the show note. So what is your final piece of advice for innovators trying to achieve more success through teaming?
Well, what I would say is never, you know, second guess yourself. And I think, you know, speaking as a woman, we sometimes just stay quiet and think like, well, it's never been done that way. Maybe my idea doesn't really make a lot of sense. But I think it's just about, you know, being able to do that. Just ask questions. We lose the ability to be curious. You know, from a very early age, children are always asking why. And there's a tendency for people to just shut that down and say, stop asking so many questions. Stop asking me, stop being so curious, right? In reality, it's the curiosity that helps us to innovate. And I also feel that technology, although it's such a friend in many ways, is also hurting our ability to innovate because we don't give ourselves enough time to think. Yeah. So any downtime, right, that we have, we're attached to our device and looking at, you know, social media or other things. And I think it's really, you know, my suggestion is that people just take the time to just think and carve out some time to just allow yourself the ability to daydream and just think about other ways that you can do things.
And I'll add to that a little different thought, and that's why Bella and I are great partners, because we think differently. Metastasiophobia. And I call that M-bombs. That's the fear of change. And if, remember, we call it the team game because it's a game, and the game never ends. It's like when the New England Patriots won the Super Bowl 2 days after the parade, they're back figuring out how we're going to get better. But as leaders, as we try to build teams or change people, these M-bombs feel will come back and, you know, we don't do it that way. I don't do it that way. I can't do it. And understand that, no, that person isn't closed-minded. That person's not disinterested. That's part of the change process. And we're going to encounter anywhere from 15 to 20 of these M-bombs as we go through the process. So don't give up. And when you look and understand that that's not an obstacle, that's part of the process, as a change leader, you'll accomplish more.
Love those pieces of advice. Great way to end the podcast. Valeria and John, thank you so much for joining me. I took copious notes. I feel like I have some things to go back to my team on. And I'll tell for everyone on Launch Street, the first thing I'm going to put the equation T equals E times A plus M with the letters on a sticky note on the wall in front of my desk, because I just think that's a great reminder. So thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.